So you can start the tape. I'm a little soggy this morning. I'm doing the dish team dash between just washing pots and pans, coming and teaching, going back and washing pots and pans. So my name is Dan Spencer, and this is the third in a five-part series this week called Lesbian and Gay Journeys of Faith. Today's session is called The Risks of Reconciliation. And we're going to be focusing on the story of the Compassionate Samaritan, or the Good Samaritan, as we more commonly know it. But like I've been doing for each of the other series, I'd like to start with a prayer. Again, this day, it comes from Chris Glazer's collection of prayers called Coming Out to God, Prayers for Lesbians and Gay Men, Their Families, and Friends. And this is, he's got them for several different days. This is the one that he has on day one. And again, listen for the themes of reconciliation in the prayer. I forgot to introduce myself. Hold on just a second. Did I start? Okay, sorry. Listen for the themes here. I used to be the team minister here, and it was so annoying when people didn't introduce their topics and stuff, so I had a moment of panic. Sorry about that. God, the earliest gospel writer, wastes no time in informing us that Jesus rose early and found a lonely place to pray. God, the closet is already a lonely place, but the point is well taken. Those of us in closets may use our wilderness experience as an opportunity for prayer. Those of us out of closets may escape the pressure and the glory that freedom in Promised Land entails by taking time to be with you. In prayer, the closet doors open between the human and the divine, between those who are gay and those who are not, between those in the closet and those out. Thank you, God, for opening doors in the midst of dividing walls, making us one body as we pray together. Thank you, God, for opening doors to your divine glory and the divine glory within us, illuminating our darkest closet, casting in shadow our brightest revelations. Thank you, God, for opening doors among us, though we are separated geographically, culturally, ethnically, sexually, that we might pray as one community, transcending our own diaspora, our own dispersion among those who do not share our experience, either of spirituality or of sexuality. In prayer, you have made all ground between us holy ground. We remove our shoes in reverence. Amen. Today's going to be a little different than the other 2 days in that you're going to be a lot more involved. But I want to do just a very brief recap of where we've been the first couple sessions. As I mentioned in session one, this week we're exploring the faith experience or our spiritual journeys from a gay and lesbian perspective. And what this means, and I want to acknowledge this up front, is that for some of us, it will mean journeys of imagination outside ourselves. And for others of us, it will mean journeys of imagination inside or into ourselves. And so I just invite you to, wherever you fit along the sexuality spectrum and your experience in that, to play with these journeys of imagination. All of us will be on these journeys together. Last night, we explored one of the paths that gay and lesbian people oftentimes find as a spiritual journey, starting from a situation of exile, and I put the little sheet up there again, and crying out to God, how do we sing your song in a foreign land? To moving towards embracing that exile as a way of experiencing the gospel and finding hope for beyond the time of exile when we live in a vision of inclusiveness and welcome. That moving beyond exile will mean bringing about reconciliation between churches and peoples and communities that are deeply polarized. And there are risks that come in any time of working for reconciliation. Now, most oftentimes when the issue of reconciliation comes up in the churches around gay and lesbian people, the question usually gets framed something along the following lines. What are the risks to the church in rethinking its stance on homosexuality? What are the risks of the church in accepting and welcoming lesbian and gay and bisexual persons as whole persons of God? Now, I think that's a very important question. I don't want to belittle that at all, but that's the question we normally start with. It's valid and important because the churches are polarized around this issue, And part of our witness as a community of faith to the rest of the world is the unity we find in our faith in Christ, and yet we're deeply divided on this. Many of you may know that homosexuality has been called potentially one of the most divisive issues to face the churches since slavery split many of our denominations. And so this is an important question to be faced. I would maintain, however, from a gospel perspective, that more important than asking what are the risks to the church in not accepting gay and lesbian people would be to say, what are the risks to the churches of not welcoming gay and lesbian people? What are the risks in terms of compromising the gospel if we exclude a whole category of people? However, I'm not going to talk about that one today either. I just put it out there for your own thinking. The question I'd like to ask today is, what are the risks for all of us around the question of gay and lesbian people? And I want to approach it from the question that's usually not considered. What are the risks to gay and lesbian people in working for reconciliation in the churches? If we pause and ask the question, why do gay and lesbian people even bother staying in the churches? And then asking, if we choose to stay, what are the risks of staying? That's the kind of framing question I'd like to ask today. Now, I'm not going to spend much time on this question of why we stay. There are a variety of responses, and I think it'd be different for each gay or lesbian person of faith. I think at root, though, we stay because we have experienced the gospel, and we find the gospel brings life to our life, and we want to share that in community with other people. And so we're committed to that vision of the gospel, committed to that sharing, and committed to the reconciliation, the hard work of reconciliation that brings with us. We've been grasped by the gospel vision of reconciliation with our enemies, with those who persecute us. And we oftentimes find those people in the very communities in which we participate. And so exploring what some of those risks are, what it means to follow Jesus and loving our enemies, is what I want to talk to you a little bit about today. To do so, I want to use one of the stories that Jesus, I think, used to illustrate this going the extra step and risking reconciliation with people who are enemies. And that's the story of the compassionate or the Good Samaritan. What I'd like to do is do kind of an imaging exercise with it and then have a chance for people to break into smaller groups to talk about some specific things, give you a chance to find yourself in the story and see what the story feels like when you're in it. And then we'll talk about how that feels and what it might mean about reconciliation. So if you would all just, if you're comfortable closing your eyes, whatever, I'm going to read through the story of the Good Samaritan. Now, the scene here opens on the road to Jericho. And it also takes and then moves to an inn. And the characters we're going to be focusing on are a priest and a Levite, a traveler, an innkeeper, and a Samaritan. So, reading from the Gospel of Luke. But the expert in the law wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, they beat him and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan traveling by came to where the man was, and upon seeing him, took pity on him. The Samaritan went to the man and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then the Samaritan put the man on the Samaritan's own donkey, took him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day the Samaritan took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper and said, 'Take care of him. And when I come back, I will repay you whatever more you spend.' Which of these 3 do you think was the neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." Now I'm going to read that story again. But before I read it this time, I'd like you to pick one of the characters in the story to identify with. Choose to be the priest or the Levite. Choose to be the traveler who's beaten up. Choose to be the innkeeper who receives the traveler. Or choose to be the Samaritan who helps the traveler. Choose one of those 4 groupings of characters. And now see if you can put yourself into the story and have it take place through your eyes as I read it again. But the expert in the law wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan traveling by came to where the man was, and upon seeing him, took pity on him. The Samaritan went to the man, bandaged his wounds, poured on oil and wine. Then the Samaritan put the man on the Samaritan's own donkey, took him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day, the Samaritan took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper and said, 'Take care of him, and when I come back, I will repay you whatever more you spend.' Which of these 3 do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told the expert in the law, "Go and do likewise." If your eyes aren't already closed, I invite you to close them now and just go through a short guided imagery with me to help you get further into the story. As you think of your character, are you from the countryside or from the city? What kind of home did you leave that morning? Are you young, old, somewhere in between? Are you single, married? Do you have children under your responsibility? Are you poor or wealthy? Do you feel healthy or sick today? Begin to feel within you this person with whom you identify. What kind of day is it? Is it hot and dry? Cold and wet? Can you feel the wind blowing? What sounds or smells or sights or physical sensations surround you? How do they make you feel on this day? How did you happen to be on the road today? If you were passing by, where were you going? Did you have a sense of urgency, or were you calm? As the scene unfolds and you find yourself in it, what emotions do you feel? What do you tell the neighbors afterward? Now, as you're ready, feel free to open your eyes and come back to the larger group. What I'd like you to do now is to put into groups of 3 or 4, and we'll spend about 10 minutes or so. I'd like to have each person talk about their character and how the story unfolded through your eyes and the perspective you gained from being that character. In particular, talk to each other about what insights, feelings, or perspectives you gained out of the story. We'll take about 10 minutes for that, so you can move around and get comfortable and introduce yourselves. 3 or 4 people. 10 minutes, or you can pause the tape for about 10 minutes. I did very quickly just poll the groups, find out who chose whom. How many of you chose to be either a priest or a Levite? How many of you chose to be the one who was beat up? All right. How many of you chose to be the innkeeper? And how many of you chose to be the Samaritan? Oh, what a great breakdown. Okay. Well, I'm going to send you back into groups again. But first, I would like to have all the priests and Levites meet over here. You're going to have a Levitical convention to talk about a few things. And I would like all the people who were beat up on the road to meet in the back corner over here. And I'd like all the innkeepers to meet over in the far corner over here. And all the Samaritans, you're being driven out of Galilee, you're coming back to Samaria, meet over here. We could do that very quickly, and then I'll give you your next set of instructions here. What I'd like you to do now is to take the character that you had and think back on the story in light of some questions I'm going to give you. But with one stipulation, if you haven't already, I'd like you to imagine that your character is gay or lesbian. All right? Think of your character as being gay or lesbian, and then consider together some of these questions as a group. How might being gay or lesbian have affected your interaction or experience in this story? Related to that, secondly, what role might homophobia have played in how this interaction or this story played out, if you're gay or lesbian? Number three, were there any positive dynamics in the story that resulted from your character being lesbian or gay? Number four, what insights do you gain about being lesbian or gay, about the story, or about risking reconciliation? And finally, and we'll spend some time when we come back in larger group, but if you have time in your smaller group, what can we do about reconciliation between gay and non-gay people? Do we gain some insights from this experience today? Let's spend some time talking about how being gay or lesbian affected your interaction experience and what role homophobia might have played. And we'll take about 15 minutes or so for this. So, spend a little time thinking and then begin talking. If you find your groups are too large, you're welcome to divide them in half. Sense from going around the groups about this, the first couple of questions. Let's start with the first one. How might being gay or lesbian have affected your interaction or your experience? How about the priests and the Levites? Any insights on that?
Well, one gal said that they tend to be more compassionate, would be more likely to stop it again as a priest or Levite. You didn't.
What might have prevented that from happening?
Well, fear of rejection or homophobia.
Okay, the homophobia then, possibly. Yeah. Yeah. What's the risk of homophobia? What's the risk of stepping out of your role to help if you're a priest or a Levite?
Under their laws, the risk of being contaminated and becoming unclean.
Well, the exposure and then losing your status.
Okay, yeah. So both possibilities. In the priestly times, stopping and helping somebody who's bleeding makes you impure. If you're rushing out to a priestly duty, that defiles you. But also the whole question, if you're exposed as being gay or lesbian, what happens to your priestly status?
Or that you might be accused of having an interest in this person, helping them, maybe it was actually a sexual interest.
Ah, so your intentions might be misinterpreted because of homophobia. You stop to help, other people see that as you're coming on to the...
We also mentioned the idea
grooming behavior. Grooming behavior.
Pardon?
Grooming. It's grooming behavior.
Grooming behavior.
Yeah.
Do you want to explain what you mean by that? Grooming
behavior? Especially dealing with adolescent sex offenders, they groom people. They have a tendency to spot somebody that they want to do something, and then they real nice profile them, and you'll see them hovering around them. And in the sex offender program, you can see grooming behavior when they act differently toward one person than another.
So if you don't want to be perceived that way, you might not be willing to risk. It's the risk to you.
The other thing that we thought might be as you turn was the idea of having them being blamed. Maybe you beat him. Maybe you were the one that did this, and then you bringing it in after you.
Okay, Allison?
If I were passing somebody by and were being in the position of being gay or lesbian, one thing in my mind would be a sense of, how do I know that this person would help me if I were in that situation? I know that gay and lesbian people often aren't helped, and there might be a factor of, why should I bother if I know that this person would never help me?
If you've experienced a lot of homophobia already that's made you angry or bitter or whatever, yeah. How about the travelers back here? Any insights from what it might have been like for you to be gay or lesbian, how that might have affected your experience, and what role homophobia might have played?
Well, you think you'd be getting beat up and robbed just because you're a lesbian.
Yeah.
And then because somebody always hates you. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like being, like always hated by somebody and never feeling safe. So you think you're either getting beat up because of that reason, but then also lying there. I can imagine that a heterosexual person would feel that, oh, nobody's going to help me because they're going to think I'm a bum. But if you're also lying there and also homosexual, then it's really over.
So you have both the experience of being beat up in the first place because you're gay or lesbian, homophobia there, but also diminished expectations of even being helped because you're gay or lesbian. Mm.
Okay. Yeah. I think given in our society now though with AIDS, is that would even be a more dominant force, even for other people helping.
Mm-hmm.
This person is bloody and bleeding, what is it going to do to me? Am I going to be affected?
Very much. When we talk about risks and risk-taking and associating AIDS with gay people, and all those kinds of elements together with safety stuff. Mm-hmm. The AIDS, in some ways, the AIDS is our equivalent today to what the priests and the Levites would have faced by touching blood in their day. It was a hand.
And a little bit of guilt can be added into that, too. A little bit of, we're taught that this is bad to be this way.
Mm-hmm.
And so here they feel bad if they don't want to stop for me. Well, I understand because I am, I do have that.
So if you're a gay or lesbian, you've got internalized homophobia. Maybe you think you deserved it. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't have been holding that fellow's hand as I was walking down the street.
Yeah.
I should have walked more masculinely. I let my wrist go too limp. whatever. But these are the dynamics of internalized homophobia. We blame ourselves. Say, I did cause this to happen. How about the innkeepers? I think you had an interesting one to look at in terms of how being gay or lesbian might have affected your interaction experience and what role homophobia might have played. Any insights?
Well, we thought it might have cut either way in terms of how helpful the innkeeper might have been. On one hand, a gay or lesbian innkeeper might have been more compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been beaten up himself at one time.
I know firsthand what anti-gay or aggression or violence feels like.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Or on the other hand, might be more afraid of being found out for who he or she was through this situation, and therefore, and maybe losing a business or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be.
What about the dynamics might make the innkeeper more afraid? What's the innkeeper been asked to do?
Take care.
Pretty intimate ways, too. This person's pretty badly beat up. The innkeeper's going to be touching this person, changing the wounds, taking care of them, being pretty intimate with the person.
We don't want this kind of person to be known to frequent our joint, or we don't get other business, and the neighbors might be scared away, or won't want their children to come by, they won't have their relatives stay here.
Mm-hmm.
We initially started out thinking, well, it might not affect it at all, because it's strictly a business transaction. Then we got into more about how intimately we probably would be caring for someone bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know if this Samaritan's going to come back. On the other hand, we can hide it because we are getting some payments, so we can't say, listen, it's all for the sake of business, we're taking care of this.
So you can, in your situation, homophobia can operate lots of different ways. If you're a closeted innkeeper, being asked to take care of someone intimately can be very threatening. On the other hand, because you can say it's a business transaction, you can remove yourself from that and not worry about exposure. Okay. The other hand, being gay may have been giving you more empathy to the experience of being beat up, so it may make you more caring and compassionate. Lots of ways you could cut. Or, as you say, it may not play any factor at all.
We didn't talk about this, it just occurred to me, what if we were the same sex, the innkeeper and the person beat up, and we started having a relationship, which happens when people are in intimate caring situations, sometimes nurses and patients get some sort of attraction, and then my own homophobia might come up if I start feeling feelings towards this person, and then I might back off.
If you listen to gay and lesbian veterans talk, oftentimes the very first experience they had of a relationship developed in wartime, where one person was wounded and the other person, the same sex, was caring for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's come over to the Samaritans. How did being gay or lesbian affect your experience, and what role might homophobia have played?
what are the issues really became that you think, if you're gay and lesbian, you think about all the risks, about doing something or not doing it, or, I mean, there's an enormous amount of internal dialogue that goes on, especially as you get older and older in the experience, because you've had difficulty with homophobia before. And so what happens is that, God, you know, what happens if this person is gay, or what happens if this person really doesn't want to be helped by a gay person? Mm-hmm. Will they get mad at me later if I help them, if they find out? You know, I mean, God, somebody touched me. You know, I mean, this gay person touched me.
I would rather die than
Well, you would have, you know, I mean, that may have been, but I mean, that's a real, it was a sense that you're sort of frightened about that, because of even helping somebody.
So your experience being a gay person leads you to hesitate, or could lead you to hesitation, a whole cataloging of what if this, what if this, what if this. You don't necessarily have the luxury of just rushing in without thinking about the ramifications.
That's correct.
Okay. There was another group of Samaritans here, were there not, or did you have any particular insights, or...
But one of the things that ideally I would want to do is I would want to pray about it and not look at, I don't like to identify people with those compartments. Mm-hmm. I would more say, you know, as a mother, as somebody who helps earn money for my family, am I the one to take this risk? Mm-hmm. But the thing that I always think about Samaritans, as I've identified with being, is that they have shame-based identity themselves. Mm-hmm. And that usually out of that, there's more willingness. And I don't know if it relates or not, but I know the doctor in Siberia, or whoever it was, that operated on a prisoner when the guards told him to let him die, because they let him die, poured out his story to the prisoner who he operated on. The prisoner was Solzhenitsyn, and the doctor was killed the next morning. But look what happened. And he took that risk crossing the Polaris. I would ideally like to be that way, but I don't know if I would. Until I'm in the situation.
Take that extra step of caring. It does involve a lot of risk of vulnerability.
Yeah, it might cost you your life, and you might abandon your responsibility to somebody else.
Let me ask you this question to the Samaritans. Any connection between the fact that you're gay or lesbian and you left the person at an inn and left yourself?
And not taking care of the individual.
Not taking care of them.
Well, I don't think there's been...
I was busy.
Yeah. Oh, no way. You did it anyway.
His wife may have done
that. Very true.
So, I don't know. If I looked at a person, I can't tell whether they're gay or not.
And I probably wouldn't think about it. I would. Or if I was, how do you know? I
mean, let me put it this way.
Crush your forehead for him.
Let me put it this way. As myself as a gay person, I've seen myself in a lot of scenarios where I'm perfectly willing to help initially, because the risk of exposure is pretty low. But the longer I hang around, the more chance there is that I'll be exposed as gay or lesbian. So I might easily bind up these wounds, take them to an innkeeper and say, sorry, I can't hang around, but here's some money, you take care of them. So it's just a little risky for me to stay around here anymore.
Well, 2 silver coins was a lot of money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there was, I mean, I'm not belittling it at all. I'm saying this, sometimes there is a range of our willingness or our ability to respond based on our fears.
Mm-hmm. Right. But you still have the possibility that the traveler was unconscious and didn't realize it was Samaritan to take care of him. And he became conscious. He might have really freaked out.
He might have totally freaked out. There's a Samaritan touching me.
Yeah. So he might have been doing it pretty good in the traveler, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have about 5 more minutes. Let me just ask very quickly. Some of these have come out, but were there any other things about positive dynamics? Or you want to say something? Yeah.
When you get to this parable part, when it comes to helping somebody, there's all types of help. In this case, it's certainly a dramatic case. The guy's bleeding and dying and so on. When we talk about helping a person, and I turn around and say, I'm a heterosexual, I'm going to help a homosexual, does that mean I'm going to help somebody because I think it's wrong and I'm going to make them a straight person? Or am I going to help them because I want to help them bring them out of the closet? Or am I going to help them by inviting them to the church? Or do I help by making somebody, mold somebody into my own image? Is that helping?
How would people see that as being helping? Just ask others.
I'm helping somebody that's obviously in the wrong. Like helping a criminal. I'm helping
from your perspective, a homosexual is in the wrong place.
I'm helping somebody that's in jail and then they put him on a straight life. Taking him off drugs. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the missionaries in Alaska... You know,
I'm helping, yeah. I'm helping someone to heathen.
Well, the Eskimos would say, the helping hand strikes again. You know?
Yeah.
When Mary Carlson and I last week... Let me just say one thing. When Mary Carlson and I were doing a series on ethics last week, one of the ethical principles is you consider the well-being from the point of view of the person you're proposing to help. So that maybe would have to do with the Eskimos there. If you see somebody who's beaten up there, chances are what you need to do immediately is to take care of the health and so forth. And then you can deal later on with whether or not that person wants help with their homosexual identity. But Allison, were you going to say?
Yeah, I was going to say what I would do is ask the person if it's possible if what they would perceive as being helpful, rather than dealing with it abstractly in your own head, you know, agonizing about...
Well, there's nothing abstract about it. If I determine that homosexuality is a disease, I have to help somebody with disease. Yeah, but then it's not abstract. It's not an abstract issue at that point.
What I would say to you is, if someone who's homosexual, thank you very much, but that's not helpful to me. Maybe find someone for whom they're really struggling with the issue and wants that help. I don't experience that as helpful. I experience that as really imposing your perspective or views on me. And so I think what Allison is saying is it's really important to check it out with the other person. I might come back to you and say, to me, what you're saying sounds like homophobia. I consider that to be a disease. Maybe I can help you. And maybe this will be a way of having a conversation begin. But I would not, the last thing I want to do is come in and impose my views on you, but I'd also ask you to respect me in the other way. Maybe we have a way of
start talking. You have to respect the fact that if you're homophobic, if that's the word, you can becoming a good Samaritan in that case is taking a lot of risk.
Yeah.
If you remember correctly, one time it was the same issue with black issue.
Yeah.
Taking care of a black. I mean, offering a black person a job is a big step sometimes. And that was a big risk, even though the person may say, I don't need your help.
Right. And I guess I would come back to Jesus' question, which of the three proved to be neighbor to the other? Mm-hmm. You know, I think in this case, the one who took the risk of healing the wounds and then, you know, moved on. But you're right, those are important questions.
The question is, what are the wounds then?
Yeah. I don't know if you had a chance to meet either the first couple sessions, but that's what we said. There are two very different approaches. Approach A over here is the starting point is homosexuality is sinful, and therefore you start by addressing the sin of homosexuality. Point B, which we're really operating out of this week, is that it's homophobia that's sinful, and therefore you address the sin of homophobia as your starting point. Two different ways of approaching it. What I'm saying is that for lesbians and gay men who are seeking wholeness in their lives and reintegrating their sexuality and spirituality, we start from point B there, that the sin that we experience is not homosexuality, but homophobia. And so that's what, you know, determines our response on things.
I think the sin is prejudice.
Yeah.
And it's just across the board, I think, in our society. We're always picking people to be prejudiced against. And so...
This is what I would come back to in terms of our story here. I think that if part of the problem with this hearing this story as it would have been heard 2,000 years ago is that to us a Samaritan doesn't necessarily sound terribly scandalous. It's not the worst thing in the world to be a Samaritan. For a good Orthodox Jew in Jesus' time, that was the worst thing. So when I reinterpret this parable to help people understand some of the scandal, you know, I say what he had here was a good homosexual communist. Who stopped? So a homosexual communist
with AIDS, right?
With AIDS.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Is it a lesbian? Because a woman is
a lot of person of color. I mean, you can start adding them all on there, but you have to think of the most offensive thing for our societal stereotypes to understand how difficult it was to hear this parable.
Yeah.
You know, that's why the people were just gasping when Jesus said this. You know?
Yeah. Was the Samaritan, could I walk by a Samaritan and, oh no, that person is a Samaritan? Would I know that walking by him?
I don't know whether it's necessary. I mean, sometimes the way they dress would, certainly the minute they open their mouths, because it would be like hearing someone we would call a hick. The Samaritans were from the rural northern part, were looked down, it was kind of the country hicks. So the minute they started speaking, you know.
Well, to me, I'm just, mine's spinning here, because in the situation of being a homosexual, until you tell me, I don't know it. And to me, that seems to add a new dimension to it. Because you could go in, help the guy, pay the guy, and you're out of there. Nobody knows the difference. There is that element to it.
And that's one of the things that makes homophobia very difficult, is, or it makes oppression in gay and lesbian people very different from other oppressions. Mm-hmm. We have the option of invisibility.
Yeah.
If you're a person of color, if you're a woman, if you're physically challenged, I mean, all these other ways of being discriminated against, they're usually based on physical characteristics and that are identifiable.
Right.
Being gay or lesbian oftentimes is not. And so we have the option of invisibility, but it comes at a terrible cost for us. It comes with the whole thing of internalizing our homophobia. Allison?
It might be worthwhile to look at this too in terms of not saying, you know, whether this person is or is not gay or lesbian, but if you perceive them to be gay or lesbian, because in this culture we often make assumptions that people are and think that we can peg people whether or not they are, you know, and so it might be that this character wasn't gay or lesbian,
right,
but they were wearing gay clothes or they looked like a faggot or whatever, so they don't get helped regardless of their actual orientation. And so that might be a case where, you know, we do sometimes make assumptions that we know, you know, that someone
Well, it doesn't has. Even, well, you know, to the person that's no problem, it's no problem. And, you know, and it's kind of a little bit, well, if I don't know you were,
right,
and you helped me, that's
Thanks
great.
Me.
And it's only a problem when I, that seems to add a whole new dimension
yeah.
to it.
We're going to have to stop here, and I'm going to let you go, but let me just address one thing. If you want to go to lunch, feel free to move out. I'll just give you a case scenario about how this happens. I have a very close friend of mine who's heterosexual, married, has a daughter. I have no questions about his sexual identity. But we're very affectionate towards each other. We always greet each other with a kiss on the lips. Now, if we do that in front of people, there's something, and in this case, he's smaller and slighter than I am. Right? The assumptions of people that people are going to make is that either one of the, probably that both of us are gay. But if they're going to choose one of them, they're probably going to choose him. And in this case, it's exactly what Allison is saying. What we have to deal with is our perceptions as much as the reality. Now, the problem we oftentimes have is homophobia prevents us from doing that kind of behavior. Prevents my brother and I being physically affectionate the same way I am with my sisters. Because it's very safe for me to be affectionate with my sisters. It's not safe for me to be affectionate with my brother. And so when we begin to challenge the assumptions and perceptions we have based on some of these characteristics, that's, I think, when we begin to really move forward. To stop here, I'd encourage people just to continue to reflect on what are the risks of reconciliation, both for gay and lesbian people and for non-gay people, if we're going to move towards reconciliation in the church. And thanks very much for coming. Say tomorrow we're going to be looking at the story of Lazarus coming out of the tomb as a way of getting into the whole spiritual process of coming out of the closet. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be interactive, so come.